We're in Kisavo. Kisavo opens up with the mitzvah of Bikurim, the first fruits that were required to bring to the Beis HaMikdash, and get into certain aspects of the mitzvahs contained in the Parsha a little later in the week. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, asks the question. He says, it's the Pasuk starts, the Kisavai El Ha'aretz. It will be when you enter the land of Eretz Yisrael that Hashem gives you an inheritance, and then he's going to give us mitzvos applicable. The literal meaning, Kisavo, is when you enter. And so the question posed by the Rebbe is, at what point, according to the Torah, does entering occur? Do we enter a room when we put our first foot in, or are we required to move our entire body within the room to say we have entered? And Rabbi Rosner, who writes this essay, says, I'm going to ask a similar question about the people. When is Am Yisroel considered to have entered Eretz Yisroel? Did we need the entire nation to have crossed over the Jordan River? Right? Or did we need the actual completion of the division of the land? And we knew that took 14 years under the leadership of Yehoshua. So he quotes a Gemara in Chulin, which says partial entry is not considered entry. And he says, Rashi in Kisavo says, it will be when you come, and he says, and you will possess it and settle it, quoting the Pasuk. He says, this Pasuk, which follows the first statement of bringing the Bikurim, the new fruits, tells us that there was no responsibility, no obligation to bring the first fruits until they conquered the entire land and they had divided it. Rabbi Rosner says, the lesson to be derived from this is that whenever we are involved in anything, to do it right, we need to be totally engrossed in the activity. When one is doing a mitzvah, or one is doing an act of chesed, it should be done wholeheartedly. He says, in our world, people seek efficiency. And the great term a while back was multitasking. He says, doing a mitzvah, don't multitask. A mitzvah requires total immersion and involvement, concentration, dedication, devotion. He says, we know that there is a general concept in halacha, ha'osek the mitzvah, pater meha mitzvah. If one is actively engaged in one mitzvah and a second mitzvah happens, you're exempt from the second mitzvah. You stay with that which you're doing. You don't have to do the second mitzvah. He says, this is a lesson of Kisavo. He says, we are to think and focus on total immersion in every mitzvah. Try to get our minds and bodies in sync. If we're doing chesed, we should take a moment to consider what we're trying to do and allow ourselves, what he says, to enter the frame of mind that, yes, we are doing a mitzvah, And therefore, attempt to envelop, to put, to bring the proper intent. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to do that which is right. And in that way, the mitzvah is done to its greatest. He says, the Chazal sought to assist us by the mitzvah of Birchat by the reality of making a bracha before doing many mitzvahs. The Ritva says the reason when we say a bracha and we say Asher Kiddushon to be mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu he sanctifies, or he allows us to sanctify ourselves before doing the mitzvah, and therefore we have the ability to recognize. And when we go and we say Asher Kiddushon Mitzvotav Al Netilas Yadoyim, we enunciate that bracha which we're doing. This is designed to be a proper preparation and reminding the doer, right, that this is a mitzvah requiring full intention and all in. And he says, Bezras Hashem, we should be able to elevate our mitzvahs in this fashion. The Pasuk tells us that when Bikurim were brought, the individual bringing Bikurim would make a statement. Yata, and now, Hine Hevesi Es Reishis Pri Ho Adama, I have now brought the first fruit of the ground, Asher Nasata Li Hashem, which you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have given to me, after you say that, you put it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'hishtachavisa lifnei Hashem aleikecha, and then you prostrate yourself, you bow before Hashem. Kisavai talks about, right, Nikra Bikurim, the speech, the statements made, the ceremony, and the declaration. This is a specific declaration, and we know when we read the Pasuk, it is a short history of the Jewish people, beginning from Yaakov and his sons going down to Mitzrayim, coming into Eretz Yisrael, the person at the end of this declaration bows down B'Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Rabbi Rosner points out, it's not very often that we have a mitzvah to bow. He says, in fact, that this is the only mitzvah in which bowing is an integral part of completing the mitzvah on the D'oraisa level. In other words, to complete the mitzvah from the Kara Torah, this is what we've got to do. And he says, let us turn our minds to why we're being asked to bow down after we've put this fruit in the proper spot. He quotes a sefer, Rinat Yitzchak, which looks at other times in the Torah where individuals bow down in an attempt to give us a broader view of what this bowing means. Yaakov Avinu, on his deathbed, asked Yosef to promise to bury him in Oret HaMachpelah. After Yosef agreed, the Torah tells us that Yaakov bowed before Yosef at the head of his bed. The Mephorshim say Yaakov's action was an expression of appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, either for obtaining Yosef's agreement to bury Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael, which Yaakov, I'm sure, realized meant he would make it happen. Or two, because he had mita shlema. Yaakov Avinu had all of his children who could say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. All of his children totally followed the Torah, the Mesorah that Yaakov gave them. And Yaakov Avinu therefore bowed. In Chaye Sarah, Eliezer, we're told, bowed twice. Once after meeting Rivka and realizing that she was the Beshert, the destined wife of Yitzchak, and a second time after Rivka's family, following the death of Bethuel, agreed that she should go. Rashi says that one must express appreciation when one receives favorable news. The Rinat Yitzchak suggests that these examples give us a clue as to the fact that bowing is a form of expression of appreciation. When somebody gives Bikurim, he's bowing in appreciation to the Rabbona Shalom, first for having guided us throughout Jewish history up to that time, bringing us to Eretz Yisrael, and giving us the wonderful, fantastic produce of which we've brought the first budding fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. The Netivei Shalom has another approach. He says, we find there are several times that we bow during Musaf on Yom Kippur. And he says at that time, it's not about gratitude, but what we are doing is we're self-negating ourselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are basically saying, all depends on you. When a poor person prostrates, you don't merely bow the body. We seem to be as close to the floor as possible, and those who extend arms and legs are exemplifying a complete surrender to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, the farmer bows when he brings Bikurim. It is recognition that everything that we ever had, have today, and ever will have is from the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Koinei HaKoyo, the creator of all. If we had the bracha of a successful crop. It's not because we were great farmers. It's not the extra toil we made in our field. It's only because the Kodesh Baruch Hu blessed our efforts. We must bow, and at that time, we basically totally surrender, and we acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKol Bidei Shamayim, everything is in your hands that we get materially. We're told the only difference is Chutz Miyirah Shamayim. We have to develop our own fear of heaven. And we're using Bikurim as a metaphor for life. We are saying, we're not just saying that Bikurim are something that depends on you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of existence, every action in our lives is totally depends on you.
But that's true in everything. So why do we choose Bikurim rather than anything else?
Here you're actually bringing something that you toiled with. A farmer can't just sit and not plow his fields, weed his fields, water his fields, weed his fields, etc., without having and thereby he yields that which he gets. It's very easy, we're told, all over, that the more effort we expend on something, the more we devote our efforts to it, and farming was the prime example then, or would be, because they still hadn't gone into Eretz Yisrael, but they knew what farming meant, right? It would be the easiest way to say, I've done this myself. And so, when you are successful, and you can imagine someone planting and has great yield, and they got tremendous bracha from the Rabbanu Shalom, we're told. It's very easy, we're told, to say, I did this, my efforts. And it's then, at that very time, when you bring the first davar to Hashem, that you say, I got to remind myself. I could have done all this work and had no yield whatsoever. The effort I put in does not create the end result. Because farming was the prime activity they did. And we're going to do when this mitzvah applied. That's why it was the best time to say, I'm subjugated to the Rabbanu Shalom.
So what you're saying is in those days, because farming was the way of making a living, so today we can do that any time that we do something successfully, and we're very productive with it.
Right.
Is that true?
Yeah, presumably. But we don't have another. We no longer have a mitzvah Bikurim today, right? And I know what you're saying. It's a very interesting thing. You know, should Chazal have instituted some other way where we can make this complete declaration? And I can't answer that one. You know, as Rav Chaim Mezizal used to say, the question is much better than the answer I can give. Okay. The next pasuk that Rav Rosner turns to is the one that says, "Ki yichalel aseres kol meiser tvuascha b'shnas hashlishis shnas hameiser." Venasata Lalevi Lager Liyasim Lialmana Vyachal Bisharapa Visavehu. when you have finished the 3 years, because there's a 3 year cyclical pattern with giving mice there, at the end of the third year, you have to give to the Levi, the stranger, the orphan, and the widow, so that they too can eat to satisfaction in your cities. He says, there's a fascinating question raised by Sorotskin in Osnayim LaTorah on the concept of Maisroi ties based on the Pasuk. He says, there are various mice, their obligations. In each of the first 6 years of the 7 year Shemitah cycle, in years 1, 2, 4, and 5, we always give the mice there to the Levi, 1/10, right? And in those years, we bring Maaser Sheni, 1/10 from the remaining amount, 0.98. And we take that Yerushalayim to eat there. And because there's probably, God willing, so much, we invite all kinds of people to join us. In years 3 and 6, there's Maaser Ani. We are told to take that second 0.98 and give it to the poor. He says, why do we bring Maaser Sheni 4 out of 7 years? Because 7th year is Shemitah, we don't do anything. But Maaser Ani only half the time. We might have thought that the mitzvah of staka should take much greater precedence over my presence of eating things in Yerushalayim with my family and those who I invite. Wouldn't it have made sense to give Maaser Ani 4 times and Maaser Sheni 2x? He quotes from Sorotskin that the purpose of Maaser Sheni is to visit Yerushalayim repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Because in visiting Yerushalayim, we get an infusion of Yerushalayim, fear of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
He quotes the Taisvais in Bava Basra that says that when we go to Yerushalayim, we see the Kohanim and the Levim with their devotion and serving in the Beis HaMikdash, we get inspired. The Maaser Sheni experience, bringing our family to Yerushalayim, is the seminar in Yerushalayim, developing proper fear, reverence for Hashem. He says, is it possible that we are suggesting that my own internal development dwarfs 2 to 1 that which I do for an ani? Is the mitzvah of becoming a Yerushalayim 2x as important as helping the poor? And he says, no. He says, rather, we're trying to focus on developing the proper mindset. Once we have the proper mindset, that affects who we are and what we do. There is no question that as one becomes stronger in Yerushalayim, his staka outflow magnifies. It's an automatic response. And so therefore, There's no way with the proper sequence that the Aeneid find any problem. People understand all came from Hashem. They understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, give my servant, you should become rich. You should be able to have the means to do mitzvot. He says, and this continual going to Yerushalayim magnifies this, enhances this, and develops it perfectly. He says, the Gemara says, fear of the Rabboni Shel Olam is the treasure house. A person who has Torah, but he doesn't have Yirat Shamayim, this reverence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is compared to someone who has the inner room keys, but can't get in the front door of the house. There's no prerequisite which that person can get there. He says, you can't have Torah without your Yirat Shamayim. That's the message. The reason why Maaser Sheni is 4 years out of six is because it enhances, builds on Yirat Shamayim, which allows the individual to take everything that they do and do it better and better, so to speak. When that happens, there's no, I wouldn't say there's no need, but maybe the amount that we give will cover whatever Maaser Eni would have been given. And I guess in the third year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to give you an active mitzvah of staka, which is really important. I don't want for you to think that with your perspective on Yirat Shamayim, you can always decide what to give. But we see that this cycle, the six-year cycle, and the seventh year being Shemitah, which was devoted in the right times to complete learning and kiyum mitzvahs, that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Jewish people to live, flourish, and grow. Okay, that's this morning's shiur. I thank you all for your time. Have a fantastic day.